This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk. My guest is Diana Gabaldone, author of the Outlander series. Her newest book and seventh in this series is An Echo in the Bone. Some years ago, Diana, you were a full-time research professor, had three kids under six, and despite all this, you wrote a practice novel, The Outlander. That was 17 million or so copies ago.
Yes, it was.
Tell us about that first book and how you got it published.
Well, I had always wanted to be a novelist from a very early age, but I came from a very conservative background. My father was fond of saying to me, "You're such a poor judge of character, you're bound to marry some bum," he said. "So nice. Be sure you get a good education so you can support your family." So I went into science. You know, I liked science. I was good at it. But I still wanted to write books. And when I turned 35, I said to myself, well, you know, Mozart was dead at 36. If you want to write a book, maybe you better get a move on here. And so I said, fine, on my next birthday, I'm going to write a novel just to learn how to write a novel. Because up to this point, I had written a lot of everything. All the things you write in the course of an academic career, all the things that I wrote as a freelance for the computer press, which I did a lot of, and comic books for Walt Disney, amongst other things.
Oh, really?
Yeah, exactly. But no one had ever shown me how to write any of this stuff. I had just, you know, looked at examples, written one, and if it didn't look quite right, I poked it till it did. So I said, well, you've been reading novels for 30-odd years here. If you write one, surely you will recognize it. So I said, fine, I'm going to write a novel. And I have only two rules. I'm going to write the entire novel. I'm not going to quit, even if I think it stinks, you know. I need to know what it takes in terms of mental commitment, daily discipline to write a novel. So I'm going to write the whole thing, no matter what. And then I'll see what I think. The second rule is that I will do my absolute best with the writing every day, because that's the only way to learn. You know, you can't be half-hearted about it. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you know, no rules. Now, I wasn't going to show it to anyone. It was certainly not intended for publication. It was just a novel. And so I said, okay, what kind of novel should this be? Because I read everything and lots of it. And I said, well, I read a lot of mysteries. Maybe I should write a mystery. And I said, no, mysteries have plots. I'm not sure I can do that. And so I said, what's the easiest possible book I could write for practice? And after some thought, I said, well, perhaps a historical novel for me, because I was a research professor in the sciences. So I thought that for me, a historical novel would be the easiest, because I was a research professor, albeit in the sciences. I didn't know what to do with a library. I said, it seems easier to look things up than to make things up. And if I turn out to have no imagination, I can steal things from the historical record. So I said, fine, historical novel, where shall I set this? Because I have no background in history, just the 6 hours of Western civilization they make you take as an undergrad. So one time would do as well as another. I'd have to look it all up anyway. So I was looking for a convenient time and place in which to set this putative novel. And I happened to see a really old Doctor Who rerun on public television. For those of your listeners who aren't familiar with Doctor Who, it's a really old, really long-running show that's produced in the UK. It's a science fiction show. And the premise of the show is that the Doctor of the title is a Time Lord from the planet Gallifrey who travels through space and time having adventures. And along the way, he picks up companions from different periods of Earth's history. Well, in this really old show, which has to have been done 40 years ago, he had picked up a young Scotsman from 1745. And this was a 17, 18-year-old kid who appeared in his kilt. I said, well, that's kind of fetching. And I found myself still thinking about this the next day. And so I said, well, you know, you want to write a book. Doesn't really matter where you set it. The important thing is to pick a point and start in. So I said, fine, Scotland, 18th century. So that's where I began.
So that's why it was Scotland.
That's right, yeah. Having no plot, no outline, no characters, knowing nothing about Scotland or the 18th century. Just the rather vague images conjured up by the notion of a man in a kilt, which is, of course, very powerful and compelling.
Typically, hundreds of fans show up at your signings, and I know this
is... which is very gratifying.
I know this is not true of most other authors, no matter what their sales are. So what's your reader magic? Why do so many show up? You had 700 last night.
I did, yes. It was quite a successful launch for the new book. I think that they just want to see me, you know, and it makes them feel closer to the characters in the book, because to them, you know, this is a real world that I've created, and they can walk into it, essentially, by opening the book. Consequently, they feel a close attachment to me as well as to the characters, because they perceive me as being part of the doorway to that world, I think.
Do you have a newsletter?
I have a website, which is fairly comprehensive.
Yeah, I saw that. I was just curious, and at your book signings... Do you read from your books or do you do something else?
I normally talk for however long the bookstore would like me to talk. I can do it for 10 minutes up to 2 hours. I used to be a university professor.
Of course.
That's essentially stand-up comedy with health benefits. So I'm very used to it. Normally I would talk maybe for 20, 25 minutes. If there's time, I will take questions from the audience for another 20 minutes or so. And then if they would like, I would read them just a small bit from the book because they've all come with the intent of buying the book after all. It's not as though I need to lure them into that. Right. It's just to sort of, you know, celebrate the book and give them a taste of it.
Who are the main characters threaded through all of your books?
Well, the main characters of the series as a whole are Claire Randall Fraser. Claire is a British combat nurse or an ex-combat nurse from World War II. Outlander, the first book, begins in 1946 when Claire has gone to the Scottish Highlands with her husband, Frank, on a second honeymoon. You know, the war is just over. They've been separated for 6 years. They're getting back together, thinking of starting a family. Well, she's out walking by herself in the Highlands one afternoon and finds a circle of standing stones, which are in fact all over Northern Britain. She walks through this circle and disappears back into 1743. Where, once she recovers from her confusion, the first person she meets is a gentleman in an 18th century army officer's uniform who looks just like her husband. Well, this turns out to be her husband's 6 times great-grandfather. Unfortunately, he also turns out to be a sadistic bisexual pervert, and while trying to get away from him, she falls into the hands of a gang of Highland Scots, who are also trying to get away from him for reasons of their own. Well, this was the 18th century. English people just didn't go to the Scottish Highlands unless they were in the army and had to. It was, you know, well past outermost Mongolia, as far as most English people were concerned. And to find an English woman, obviously cultured, and running around in what appears to them to be her shift, you know, they're bemused by this. So they scoop her up and take her back to their castle. To try to sort her out. Well, of course, she wants to get back to the stone circle and to her husband in the 20th century. But in order to stay away from Black Jack Randall, who, as I say, is a very dangerous person, she is forced to marry one of the young clansmen, which she regards as a temporary arrangement, but then begins to find herself falling in love with him. And so the story kind of unrolls there. So the story is principally hers and the young clansman that she's had to marry.
And the young clansman. So this sounds like history with a dab time travel, some romance.
More than a dab,
so
yes.
When listeners go into a bookstore to find your book, what genre will it be listed in?
They would probably find it in fiction most frequently. So far, I have seen these books sold successfully, evidently, as fiction, literature, historical fiction, historical nonfiction, because they are, in fact, very accurate in that regard, as science fiction, fantasy, mystery, romance, military history, the Military History Book Club actually carries these, gay and lesbian fiction, and horror.
And why gay and lesbian?
Well, one of the significant but minor characters is Lord John Grey, who is, you know, a career soldier. He's from an aristocratic family, a very honorable, admirable character, but he is homosexual, which in the 18th century was a capital offense. And consequently, he lives with very interesting conflicts because, you know, what does it take to be true to yourself, so to speak, to be an honorable character, to regard yourself as an honorable man, and yet to know this, you know, that society in general regards you as a pervert.
And he is the character who has his own separate series.
Well, he does, yes. That was sort of an accident. I was asked to write a short story some years ago for a British anthology of short crime, and it was historical crime. And I said, well, it would be an interesting technical challenge to see if I can write something less than 300,000 words. Yeah, sure. Well, the question then was, what should I write? I didn't want to write about the main characters of the series because of the way I write, which is that I don't outline books and I don't plan them to any extent in advance.
How much do you know when you start?
Very little. Usually I will know a few historical points that I want to deal with, historical events or settings.
Like in this new book, Saratoga.
Yes, I've known for a long time that I wanted to use the Battle of Saratoga. I just didn't get to it till this book. But yeah, it will be things like that. And as we progress through the series, of course, I know more about these people's lives and what has happened to them. So, you know, there will be conflicts outstanding that eventually will be resolved. I just don't know how they'll be resolved. But, you know, eventually we'll get to it.
What's your work day like?
Well, I mostly work late at night. write, something I learned to do when I had three small children and two full-time jobs, but I still do. I normally get up around 9 and will be awake enough actually to work around 10:30 or 11. So I work for an hour before lunch and then maybe another hour after lunch, go out and do the errands, the shopping, the gardening, mm-hmm. exercise, whatever, make dinner, socialize with my husband. And he likes to go to bed around 10, so I tuck him in and then I'll go lie down on the couch with a book. If no one needs me, and now that the kids are 27, 25, and 23, they really don't. I mean, they've all left home, but they do call sometimes. But if no one needs me, I'll fall asleep in 10 minutes or so, and I'll wake up naturally around 12:30. And so most of my writing's done between midnight and 4 a.m.
Well, thank you. My guest is Diana Gabaldon, author of An Echo in the Bone, published by Delacorte Press. This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk.